Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com with your hosts, Maureen Hollering, Steve Frampton, Brenda McCoy, and Bobby Marcheso. During the second half of the show, call in to connect for a free psychic reading. Join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Good evening, my name is Steve Frampton and you're listening to the Psychic Viewpoint sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. This evening we'll be discussing Taoist alchemy with our special guest Phil Lang, but before we get started, please join me in welcoming my co-host Bobby. How are you doing?
I'm good. You went to me sooner than I thought. I had my mute button. I'm like, oh my god, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, Bobby. Thank you. Very good. Where are you? You're in Dakota?
One of them, yes. There's two of them.
Okay. And I'm in, is that why I stammered?
I think so. Yeah, I'm in South Dakota right now, and I travel, and as we all do, and give workshops and public galleries and events and things like that. So I usually do that about three or four times a year, and this was it. So having a good time.
Great. Well, could you tell our listeners what you do, Bobby?
Psychic medium and coaching in an aspect of. Sometimes I believe in giving more than just a psychic answer. I think it's really beneficial to help us feel the answer inside of ourselves. And so I try to guide people towards that a little bit. And then the mediumship is also tuning into the other side and bringing across loved ones who have crossed over as the same as you do.
Excellent.
Well, not the same way. I don't have the accent.
But you're busy finding dinosaurs this week.
I have been, yes. That's a story all in and of itself.
Well, you'll have to tell us about that later on in the show. I want to know more. Sounds fascinating. Using your psychic skills to identify dinosaurs.
Yes.
We'll talk about it later. Okay. Well, it's great to have you with us, Bobby. Brenda, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm back from I took a little vacation too in Virginia City, Nevada, but I'm back now in California, and I work with all you wonderful people at PsychicAccess.com.
Great. Well, it's good to have you here, Brenda. Could you share with us your gifts?
I am a predictive psychic. The crystal ball and the tarot cards and the playing cards, and I specialize in predictions, dates, times, and places.
Fantastic. Well, it's good to have you with us tonight, Brenda. Maureen, how are you?
I'm here. Thank you very much. I'm not on holiday.
You're not on these two swanning around.
And you were too. I guess I'm just nothing going on.
Oh, of course, last week I was.
Yes, you were. You forgot already. So, yes, I am fine. Thank you so much. It's nice to have everybody here tonight. We were without the guys.
Except for
well, last week and the week before we were without you, yes. Remember? You don't remember your
house. We struggled.
Yes, we did.
It was hard.
I cried.
It's difficult without Steve.
It's very difficult.
Well, Maureen, could you tell us a little about your work?
Okay, by the script, is that what you're trying to
Just read it out.
Okay. Well, I work with everybody at PsychicAccess.com, and I am an empath intuitive psychic advisor. And I I'm well-versed in the tarot. I'm self-taught. And I help people the direction, and I also feel that every negative can be a positive as well. That sums that up.
I believe that as well. Always finding the bright side. And identifying how things serve us, even if they're negative at the time.
Exactly.
So we, you know, like having Bobby on the show.
Exactly.
And then the bright side is at least we've got somebody to make fun of.
Did I say that we've missed you?
Oh.
Did I say that? I just want to make it clear that we did, in fact, miss you.
Oh, good.
Okay.
I'm flattered. Okay, well, I'm going to introduce our guest. We've got Phil Lang joining us, and he's a very well-respected workshop facilitator. And he's focused on the lesser-known esoteric practices that really provide some extremely powerful tools for personal transformation. I know that he's been teaching the Flower of Life workshop since 2005 to people from many different backgrounds, and he's got a big interest in human potential, which led him to the work of Drumvalo Melchizedek, founder of the Flower of Life workshop. And I've been reading his book recently. It's absolutely fascinating. I recommend it. Now, Phil is very much interested in sacred geometry and the human light body in relation to personal integration, ascension, and spiritual growth. And I know that he's really fascinating and extremely knowledgeable, so we're going to have a great show. He's naturally sensitive, and he's a real catalyst in illuminating and supporting new possibilities and the practical applications of the multidimensional self. He also teaches the extremely powerful Kunlun Negong system, which was developed and taught by Max Christensen. And this is a very rare Taoist internal alchemy practice for self-awakening. Now, I'm going to give you Phil's website now. I'll also repeat it after the interview. Please do visit his website. It's extremely interesting and his work's amazing. It's formlessandtrue.com. Phil, welcome to the show.
Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm extremely well. Excited to speak with you again.
Me too. Thanks for having me aboard. And hello also to Maureen, Brenda, and Bobby for giving me the opportunity to explain something that has meant a lot to me in a very rapidly short period of time, and that caused me to want to share this with others. And me and several of my colleagues have been blessed to be able to learn this from our mutual teacher, Max Christensen. And it's not widely known, at least in the West, and even in China. This system was historically rather secret. And now it's out in the open for those willing to learn, like so many other esoteric practices that seem to be slowly being revealed to the public at this period in human evolution. And it dovetails so well with some of the other work that you mentioned in my intro, and that's why I like teaching the both of these systems, because they work together so well. Because at the essence, all spiritual traditions are about alchemy, aren't they? They're about transforming the lower man into the higher man. And what I like about the system we'll talk about tonight is that it sort of distills everything down to its essence so that the modern individual is able to incorporate it in their busy life and still get the benefits that are ours by our birthright. This is for everybody to know.
Well, I wanted to ask you, first of all, Phil, if you could explain a little about Taoism itself, because I know that you've got really great knowledge, and I wanted to start at that level and take it down from there. So could you tell us about Taoism?
Sure. First of all, for the benefit of the radio audience, Taoism is a vast, vast area of philosophy and knowledge. It's huge. It is from China. It goes back to at least the time of Lao Tzu, who's sort of credited with bringing that body of knowledge out through his book called the Tao Te Ching, which comes from about the second or third century. And although there's a religious order to Taoism, there's many different branches that each emphasize a different aspect of spiritual nature. But at its core, Taoism is nothing more than nature's way of life. There is a religious order, like I said, but if you really look at what it's saying, it has taken the wisdom of the ancients and applied it to how nature unfolds and how it changes over time. And they've utilized these principles of nature to incorporate it into one's spiritual development. And so, really, it's just following nature's way of life. And this is why in so many of the Eastern systems of China, you see references to animals and the five elements of fire, air, water, metal, and all the things that nature's made out of. Some branches sort of emphasize religious practice. Others, martial arts. Some are more esoteric, and the system we're going to talk about tonight, the Kunlun system, it sort of has its origins in the mountains of Western China, which is the Taoist version of Shambhala. There's a close affinity in legend between those two places, and it's very fitting if you ever look into the history of that region, why the eight Taoist immortals are said to come from that. With his public work. But in essence, Taoism is just following nature's way of being. And when we as humans apply those same principles to our spiritual practice, a natural unfoldment just happens of its own accord, which is kind of nice. It's a good place for me to segue into what is alchemy, because there's a big alchemy tradition in Taoism as well. Like I said, Taoism is so vast. There's many offshoots. The culture itself is 4,000 years old, maybe longer. So they've had a long time to refine and perfect the effects of their various spiritual practices. And tonight's practice that we're going to be talking about is one of those. But alchemy really is very much like Taoism, because it's the art of imitating and accelerating nature. It is a natural art and science in that in alchemy, we don't really make anything. All we do is provide a condition within ourselves through our spiritual practices for nature to do what nature does already. So our goal in spiritual practice, whether it's enlightenment or you want to call it self-realization, is not really anything that is being made by us. It's rather made by nature. The alchemist or the practitioner or the spiritual aspirant only provides the conditions so that nature can operate effectively without being disturbed. So what we're getting with the end result of our spiritual practice, regardless of the tradition, is we want our self-realization. We want our self-awakening. And so when nature's done finishing what nature does all day long, this is what we end up with. And the entire earth and the universe are going through this same process. So alchemy is therefore the art of the microcosm and the acceleration of nature through the microcosm. And that microcosm is us. We're a microcosm of the macro. And so there's only one method for the entire work. We only do one thing, and that's to allow nature to take its course. Admittedly, however, the first thing we have to do is clean up our substance and remove what is not needed. That's alchemy, and that substance is us. In this Kunlun system practice, our substance is our body, mind, and spirit. And this is what we begin with to purify until we realize our self is divine. This is a kind of what they call inner alchemy, and it comprises certain techniques from esoteric traditions and the cultivation of these substances within us that are already present in the body, in particular the purification of the three things that are known of as three treasures. We call them Jing and Qi and Shen in the Chinese tradition, but it essentially translates to body, mind, and spirit. This is our substance. And as you can imagine, the regular person out there in the world is in various states of refining who you are. And all awakening is 99% purification. When you remove what is no longer needed, all that's left is your essence. And that's all alchemy is. And at our essence, we're already enlightened. And we've just forgotten. We've allowed our viewpoint and our perspective of that reality to be clouded over by all the false beliefs and negative things that have happened to us in our different lifetimes. And taken all together, we've forgotten who we are. And this system actually allows a very natural way to begin to strip away that which is not needed, your lower natures, so that all that's left in the end is who you really are, a divine being, an immortal, or what the Chinese would call a Xian.
Well, it's absolutely fascinating, Phil, and you've got so much knowledge. We could go in so many different directions. Yeah. Let me ask you firstly, is this something that anybody can engage in? Can everybody engage in these practices?
Yes, within certain limits. I mean, almost everybody can.
Even Bobby?
Sorry?
Even Bobby?
Oh, Bobby, yes, especially. In fact, I think the practice was made for Bobby. Well, sometimes I think the practice was made for me.
If I'm hosting, I have to say, can even Bobby do this? We have to. We get a lot of pleasure at making fun of each other. And that's possibly an impurity.
Yes, well, of course, the alchemy in this tradition will strip that away in no time, won't it? Right. So yes, anybody, even the Bobbies and the Phil Langs of the world can learn this. And if I learned it and am learning it, so can anyone else out there too. Probably later in this discussion, we'll talk about who it's not appropriate for. But since it really has nothing to do with the physical body, anyone can practice it, including the elderly, including people in wheelchairs or who have great infirmities. Missing digits or limbs, because it has nothing to do with the physical body. It refines and purifies the non-physical body first before it's made manifest in the physical body. By the time that happens, that practitioner is no longer the person they used to be. They've been transformed by many subtle and not so subtle inner and outer experiences that have changed the way they look at themselves and the true nature of reality. But in short, it is good. But we don't, for anyone to learn it, they can. But we don't teach it, generally speaking, to those under 18. They're still learning how to function in the mundane world, the world that their parents are training them to operate effectively in as adults. And so if you turn them on to a practice like this too early, they end up being conscious of two worlds at the same time, the world of form and the world of spirit. And they may grow up having a difficult time being able to know which world to trust. And so that's usually left as a decision for a person once they're, 18 or over. So we don't teach them younger than that. But for everyone else, if you're a human being, by virtue of your being a human being, this practice was naturally made for you, because that's all the Kunlun system is doing. It's pursuing nature's way, and how it manifests in the physical body is how this practice has been refined over the years to create that in relatively rapid fashion. It's really no longer possible. I mean, if you wanted to spend lifetime after lifetime incarnating, there are paths that do that, and most of us have been doing that already. But what happens if you really gotten to the proper state for practice and started aligning your practice, your spiritual practice, with the laws of nature? Then awakening can happen in a moment, and it's quite possible in this tradition to awaken within one lifetime. And by awakening, I'm talking about the highest state of awareness that a human being could get in physical form. Some people call that being an immortal or a self-realized master. There's various names, but it all depends on what the practitioner wants to get out of the system. The more you practice, the quicker the benefits become.
And Phil, for example, a person that has done this for a long, long time, that perhaps does this best, what kind of changes do they experience, or what kind of abilities do they discover?
Well, if they've been practicing for a long time, and there are certain people in China who have been born into this, they've been practicing it their whole life. It's all they know, because they're part of this tradition, and it hasn't been widely known even in China. But essentially, what it does is it refines the person, their body, mind, and spirit, to such a level that they don't age in the same way that you and I do. One of the pursuits of alchemy, regardless of whether the tradition's from East or West, is to become immortal. Of course, we're spirits, so we're immortal anyway. But what happens if you were able to attain levels of longevity that approached physical immortality? China has a long history of that, and they applied it through means that were very similar to what we would call the Kunlun system group of practices today. So one of the things that you'll see is you'll age differently. You regenerate your organs. You regenerate the glandular systems, the endocrine system. Before you regenerate those, you kind of have to purify your non-physical bodies. your, you know, your aura, your emotional or mental bodies. We lodge our impurities, so to speak, all of those aspects of our lower nature, in areas of our total multidimensional self in places other than our physical body. And that's what this system refines first. And as that happens, a whole lot of changes began to take place first in your inner experience. And it's different for everybody. And how that unfolds for you is... to where they are right now. And when the energy of the one law starts running through you, it will affect you in the best way that's appropriate for you. And so it won't be the same for everybody. But you will get some health effects on the way to those kinds of elevated states of consciousness. It's rare that a person will get sick if they practice these practices. In fact, many times if you are practicing over time, you're not actually being sick if you go and get run down once in a while. It's actually your body detoxifying and purifying. And as those impurities leave your system, you can have flu-like effects, what they call a healing crisis, but it's minor. And eventually, as you remove your lower natures, that stops becoming an issue. You just rarely never get sick. You feel very light. You feel very happy. Childlike is really, you return to sort of an original innocence. I'm not quite sure if I answered the question, but it was kind of vague to me. I have actually more specific answers, but I wanted to give it the most general answer possible for how you put it across.
No, it's fantastic, Phil. It's very, very interesting. But so how does a person get started with Kunlun Negong if they wanted to explore it? I know that you teach workshops.
Sure. Well, first of all, we don't really call it Kunlun Negong anymore, only because it confused too many people. They thought it was a martial art. It's not a martial art. We just call it the Kunlun system now. And the name Kunlun comes from the Kunlun Mountains of Western China, and it's what our teacher, Max Christensen, decided to name the system to pay honor to all of his teachers from the various traditions. And he had several. And if a person feels called to this, first they have to be willing, open-minded and willing. And usually their intuition will guide them to this. They can contact my website, or they can contact the website of our teacher, Max Christensen, at primordialalchemist.com. And there is a list of practitioners. Actually, we call ourselves apprentices that have been authorized by Max to be able to teach this. And there's about 100 of us worldwide. About half are in the United States, half are overseas in places. There's a lot in Japan, for example. It's a lot in Western Europe. And in the U.S., most of them are skewed towards the West Coast, like California, Hawaii, but they're all over the geographic parts of the United States. Some teach regularly, like myself, others not so often. A lot of us have day jobs, but there's a list there, and people can contact the practitioner the apprentice that is closest to them or is maybe doing a workshop coming up in a time and place that works for them. I'm one of those that tends to travel a bit more, and as you know, I came from California to visit your center, and in the past year, I've gone to places like Mexico and Canada as well. So it would start there. It would start either by coming to my website. Of course, I'm more than willing to talk to people about this in more detail, or they can go to Max's own personal website, which is, as I said, primordialalchemist.com. That's sort of ground zero for the Kunlun system. He's the one that was allowed to bring it outside of China, and he's been our personal teacher. I would start there.
Excellent. Thank you, Phil. And Phil, how does this connect with the flow of life? As I said before, I've been reading the Giambalo Melchizedek book, or the first one, The Ancient Secret of the Flower of Life, and I found it absolutely fascinating. And I was really interested reading about Thoth and the fact that Thoth has lived for so long. And I'm presuming that there's a connection somehow between these practices, these extremely ancient practices, and their ability to lengthen our lifespan. What parallels do you draw between the flower of life and Taoism or Taoist alchemy and, say, for example, these practices and Thoth?
Well, there's ancient traditions that go back to antiquity that may or may not still survive today. Some that do aren't that public, and for good reason. What I liked about the Flower of Life work that was brought forth by Drunvalo, as well as the Kunlun practices and the alchemical philosophy taught to us by Max, was that they're very similar in that at their essence, both these systems sort of strip away all religious dogma and cultural trappings, and they just focus on the bare truth, the essence of what is. And this allows any person, regardless of their background, to investigate the truth of existence without getting tied up in dogma or definitions, which would limit you. Also, there's the magic centered around the heart. In order to transcend this reality, you have to get to know that aspect of yourself. It has to be a real thing that's going in your life. You can call it unconditional love, but most of the traditions would agree that it's going to be centered, that ability to do that's going to be centered right in your chest. And so you're going to see in many of the ancient traditions practices that access that place in a particular way that will allow a person to achieve direct experience of transcending this level of existence that we call form or polarity and realize that they and the Creator are one. And because it's within every single one of us, it's accessible for any single one of us as well. The ancient Egyptians had their way. There were many mystery schools associated in Egypt with that. Thoth was one. He was more concerned with sacred geometry. There were other esoteric schools in Egypt as well that were more alchemical in nature. And Max Christensen also teaches alchemical traditions, yogic traditions from Egypt that are also very powerful. But at their essence, they strip away dogma and the cultural trappings of whatever time or cultural system they come from and just allow the truth, the bare truth, to be laid out. And then a person is able to investigate it in a way that is accessible and understandable for them without getting tied in down one route or false path or another. Because at its root, these things are simple. And the Western mindset, the modern frame of mind, wants to complicate things out of simplicity. And it doesn't really have to be that way. So in short, I like how they tie together because they make use of balancing higher and lower natures and bringing them together in a unification without denying the existence of the other, but bringing them together in balance so that you can transcend this level of awareness to higher levels of awareness, which is ultimately what we're here to learn on Earth.
And Phil, if somebody starts to practice these techniques, how soon do they experience changes within themselves? Is it the same for everybody, or does the unfolding or development differ depending on the person?
With the Kunlun system, the way it unfolds will be different within each person. That's because each person's a unique individual. And all you're really doing in these practices is learning to access the source of all creation. And these little access points within you, if I can call them that, in like the Hindu tradition, we call them chakras. In the Chinese systems, they don't use chakras. They call them dantians, these three energy centers that are found in the very middle of your body, from your belly to your heart to the center of your head. And all we do is, with these practices, we learn to access them. And when you do that, you don't even have to understand how it works. It just unfolds. And the first step in doing that is learning how to just turn off your mind. I have a very busy mind. That's why I took up the practice. I needed to shut that thing off. And you'd be surprised at what happens to you automatically the moment you truly just make your mind go quiet. Once you stand out of your own way, the energy of the one law that runs through all things, through all time and space, material and non-material worlds, when that starts to run through you, one of the first things it's going to do is boot out any disharmonic of energy coming through you. It's going to boot out what no longer serves you. How that looks for each person will be different. A lot of people will get very hot when they practice, or they'll get very cold, or they'll switch back and forth. You may start laughing, you may start crying, or nothing will happen at all. For me, that's what had happened to me. I made the mistake of thinking because I was doing practices and nothing was quote-unquote happening, that I was practicing wrong, or that I didn't get it, or that the system just wasn't working. That was a big mistake. I cut an hour, a year out of my life not practicing because I wasn't having the experiences that many of my colleagues were. My colleagues never gave up, however. I did for a year. And then I got back into it when I realized that what little things I was experiencing, which were extremely subtle, I thought nothing was happening at all, was actually exactly what should have been happening for me. Now, generally speaking, this Kunlun system, it's very feminine in nature. It's very yin. It's not like many of the powerful systems of awakening that you have in the Asia and Orient that force the awakenings to happen through various techniques and procedures like Kundalini and some of the hardcore pranayama breaths that force open certain abilities in a system. Since Taoism sort of follows nature's way of life, we allow those things to unfold when the person's ready. And that readiness can happen in an instant if the person's in a right frame of mind and learns how to just let go. Generally speaking, women can do that much easier than men. Generally speaking, men like to analyze. They like to evaluate and look for things. We're more proactive. Women know how to surrender. They know how to let go and just be. And the way this system works is it's aligned with nature. And because women have to carry life, they have an unlimited access to life force energy. So they're able to unfold with this practice quicker and go to heights not really obtainable by men due to their nature, because they're more yin. But many of the traditions in the Orient wake you up to these powerful levels through the use of force, whether or not other aspects of your being are ready for that kind of energy. And in the Kunlun system, like many Taoist systems, it's more allowing. The Kundalini path and what they call the fire paths that generate a lot of heat and force these openings up from the base of your spine up towards the crown, that's what we call a fire path, because hot air rises. And when you're having a Kundalini opening or something similar, you feel that energy rise up the spine. In the Kunlun system, it's a downward flow. It starts at the top and moves downward. It's not hot, it's cool. Therefore, it's much like water, because water flows downward, doesn't it? And it's yielding, and it's cool, and it's very feminine. This practice develops the magnetic potential, the magnetic aspect of a person's electromagnetic field. So to do that, you have to get very quiet. You have to become very allowing. And so the Taoists say you do by not doing, which doesn't sound like it makes sense, but then when you realize that the real thing comes when you just let go, it happens all on its own. This is what we mean by alchemy following and imitating nature, is that when you provide the conditions that nature needs to do what nature does all day long, which is to evolve, you're accelerating your evolution by turning off your mind and just allowing the energy of the one law to start running through you. So usually, and I think you saw this when you were in the workshop, some people were largely quiet. Others had reactions and felt a lot of internal movement. No way is really typical, and it really doesn't matter anyway, because the Taoists found out a long time ago that if you just hold a certain mindset and breathe in a certain way, the way in which the human body, which is divine by creation, is just going to react in a certain way automatically. How that will be for each person, again, depends on the path that they've lived as unique individuals, because when the energy of the Tao starts to run through you, what's appropriate for you to come to balance in any given moment may not be the same as the person practicing next to you. We've all led a unique existence, and that's how it should be. It's a very personal path, and that's one thing I like about it. How was it for you?
I found it really powerful. I've been practicing since, and I was really amazed by the way the body kind of just put itself into yoga postures, and yoga postures that aren't regular yoga postures. It's as though when you're in the practice, your body knows what it needs to do and how it needs to adjust itself. But I also had some really powerful visualizations. In actual fact, I don't know if you remember, Phil, but at one stage I felt myself in a different state. And I don't mean a different mental state, although I did, but a different physical state. And I went and spent time in the home of a client that had a lot of spiritual problems, and I felt that almost I transported myself there and dealt with the spiritual problem just through the practice.
Yes, and that can happen. A lot less can happen, and anything in between, it all depends on... See, we're all kind of hardwired in a different way to receive subtle information. And so when you start to connect with the subtle worlds, usually the first things that come through to your attention are those areas that are already your nature to receive information on. Like, you might be very visual. You might be able to leave your body fairly easily. And so it was the first thing that made itself manifest. But it's important to emphasize that having quote-unquote experiences during the practice is not really the goal. I know you know that because we've talked about it. The reason that Max Christensen had formulated these practices was to really give a very efficient and natural way to achieve the highest levels of awakening that were possible. And so having a goal of self-realization was really what happens when you pursue these practices to their natural end, which is really just the beginning of a whole new level of learning. However, along the way, yes, you can find many changes happening within you that will naturally lead you to your own self-knowing, your own self-mastery. And as the Taoists say, if a man can master himself, that is enlightenment. But you, like I say, you could have experiences where you transport out of your body or have visions. Or what also is very common is you get very clear self-revelations about your role in existence and what the true nature of reality is. It's almost like an aha moment when you finally get it. And it can make you burst out laughing in a sort of bliss because you realize that every drama you've ever lived was just a play that your higher self put before you for your learning and growth. And after that, you stop taking life so seriously, which is an important element of this Kunlun system practice, because most of us that know the hardcore spiritual people in our life, they take their practice very spiritual. You know, they see the old black and white photos of the yogis and the lamas and the masters, and they're sitting here looking very stern, and they get into their practice, and they're very stern and very serious. But one of the things that was impressed upon us when we were training to be able to share this system with others was that the real masters, they did not follow anybody. They weren't stern, and they didn't withhold and restrict anything about themselves. They followed nature's way. So you might be at this most solemn ceremony, and all of a sudden the master might just get up and start laughing, breaking protocol, dancing, just being in bliss with himself. And you find that kind of freedom in a lot of what they call crazy wisdom. The person just looks crazy, but actually they're just following their own inner guidance, and they're naturally joyful and bliss-like, like children were before we socialized it out of them to be adults and responsible. In the Kunlun system, we ask people to smile and to not take their practice so darn seriously, because it will actually prevent the awakening from occurring. So they have to be serious without being serious, and they have to do without doing, if that makes any sense. But they do want to be innocent, childlike in nature, and not take themselves too seriously. Because in the end, if you want to achieve awakening, according to Taoist and alchemical knowledge, you have to honor your dark side with your light side. If you want to know the light, you can. And we got both in us. But if we spend all our time hanging out in the light, we're not in balance. And if you look at the yin-yang symbol, light interpenetrates the dark. Both have a piece of the other in them, and yet they're swirling around each other, unified as one. So it's not a denial of polarity, it's a rather an integration and balancing. In order for alchemical transformation to occur, to bring the man of lead into the man of gold, you have to balance all of your parts together in a particular way, and bring them together without denying another part of yourself, which means you have to learn to love yourself anyway. And one of the things that this path will do for those that continue with it is that they'll eventually be facing their shadow side. And that's the number one reason why most people don't continue on any spiritual path, is because eventually they're going to confront themselves. They're going to remember something about themselves or an aspect of themselves that wasn't pleasant, or something they've always blamed themselves of. And that kind of pain and suffering makes the people stop in their tracks and just sweep it under the carpet, and then they don't pursue. But if they would just pursue it long enough to allow the energy of the source, of the Tao, of God, whatever you want to call it, to purge it from your systems, it'll be gone forever. And you've just gotten rid of a huge energetic monkey on your back that was keeping you from being able to perceive who you really are.
Well, thank you, Phil. We'll take a short commercial break, Phil, and then we'll carry on discussing, because it's extremely interesting.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing, and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com?
Well, Phil, I wanted to ask you if you can explain a little about Qigong and Neigong to us.
This is really interesting. Because a lot of times people, when they hear of a system that's from China, they automatically think of Qigong and martial arts, which are related in a way. But the ancient masters had different ways of looking at things. And the history of how the most powerful practices came out of antiquity is pretty interesting. But it's been said that in the beginning there were 12 original mystery schools, and that these were formed by certain ancient personages that gave humanity all the information that they needed to know. But as time went on, these practices and these knowledges, which were very common at the time, they began, like they were the trunk of a tree. You have a single trunk of a tree, but then over time you get a branch, and then two branches, and you end up with a bunch of branches and twigs, and none of the twigs really remember how they were all once related. They just look at another branch and say, you're different from me, I'm not talking to you. And so different systems were left with pieces, and what this system has tried to do is bring back all the ancient root practices that were once common in one system, and allow the modern person to reapply them in their inner and outer daily life to attain these higher states of awakening. However, The Taoists from this particular branch where the Kunlun system practices come from, they looked at humanity as they viewed humanity as already being awakened. They already were awakened, because if you listen to the esoteric traditions, humanity had already earned that through its evolution a long, long time ago. But we had that fall, remember? The fall of Atlantis, whatever. However, we've forgotten what our true nature is. We still have it within us, but it's become clouded over. And so when you purify yourself, so to speak, when you remove what is no longer needed, the only thing that's left after you've distilled yourself through these practices is your own enlightened essence. But many systems look outside themselves. In Qigong, for example, which is very powerful, it can give you incredible strength, health, well-being, focus. Many incredible abilities come from practicing Qigong. You're absorbing energy from external sources, from the moon, from the sun, from the earth, and you bring it inside yourself. But the alchemical Taoists, they looked at things differently. They says, wait a minute, the outer world of form is all an illusion. It was made by the heart of the Tao. It was made by the heart of source energy. It's all an emanation, and my brain is perceiving it, which is clouded in illusion and the mind. So why would I want to absorb energy from the outer and bring it inside myself when I can access the source of all that is within me already and emanate it outwardly? See the difference? In one case, you're going out into the external and bringing it in yourself, but it really won't give you the levels of awakening that we're talking about. In the other way, you're accessing portals that are yours by birthright, by virtue of being human, and you allow this one energy that runs through all things to simply flow into you by getting your mind out of the way and just allowing nature to do what nature already knows how to do, because it's a lot wiser than you and I. So you emanate outwardly this divinity rather than going out into the world of form, the world of illusion, and bringing... Now, that's not to dismiss Qigong. It's very powerful. But we're talking about a practice that has been formulated and refined over centuries to bring about self-awakening. And so in this case, we transform ourselves from the body of flesh and blood into pure light and energy. And that kind of ability has been known by different traditions, by different names. In this system of Kunlun Neigong, the highest attainment or highest realization of these practices is realizing yourself as pure light and energy. You achieve what's called the gold dragon body. That's the same thing that you may have read about in Tibetan tradition, which they call the rainbow body. Or the Egyptians had the Merkaba, the electromagnetic field that could take body, mind, and spirit from one dimension into another at will. They also called it the body of Ra. Many different traditions from history had a name for this ability to transform oneself into their true nature, which is light, and be able to go on to higher realms of experience. And this system, these practices in this system are very simple to learn. They can be taught to a child, the elderly. And you saw the workshop. They can be taught in a day. And they all complement each other in such a way that you will learn to emanate the divine outwardly from you, out into the world, where you'll have a positive effect on your friends, your family, your life. And at the same time, you'll start getting subtle understandings about the nature of who you really are. And as you walk through this illusion, you become a part of the world, but not of it. And that's why we call it a practice, because they are deceptively simple. They're very simple, but they're very, very powerful. So we can't teach it to people that are with mental health problems because they're not grounded. Bipolar people, we can't teach them. It could trigger aspects of themselves that they haven't learned to master yet. These people need grounding. And so they need some of the more earthy practices that we teach that keep them grounded in their physical body. We also don't teach this to people who know or suspect they may have leukemia or blood cancers, because when we generate this much chi or life force, it travels along the pathways of your body that are your blood, your bloodways, your veins and arteries. So if you have a blood cancer and you're infusing that area with that much life force, you may get an effect that will make your doctor a bit nervous. So just for to be safe, there's other ways to handle, natural ways of handling blood cancer. But for some of the methods that we teach, we wouldn't practice it or teach it to someone who has that kind of condition going on. And we also, just for safety reasons, because it's very legal, we're not going to teach it to a late stage woman who's pregnant, for obvious reasons. It's just best that they wait until they have their baby, and then they can learn the practice.
Phil, can I ask you, you've obviously worked a lot with your colleagues and with Max. What's the most striking experience you've had, and whether that's an experience that you had personally or an experience that, in another person that you've observed?
Okay, the first part of your question cut out, so I didn't quite hear what you're asking me. Could you repeat that?
Sure. Yeah, I was saying, Phil, that I know you've worked a lot with Max and with your colleagues. So my question is, what's the most striking experience you've either had yourself with these practices or that you've observed in another person using these practices?
Well,
I know that you showed me a couple of photographs when you were teaching the program in Knoxville. You showed me a couple of photographs, yes. And it was quite clear that the person's physical being was changing, was becoming lighter.
Well, yes, there are some people that Max have taught for a long time now who applied themselves and didn't give up. They wanted to know what it's like to become enlightened and use internal alchemy as a rapid means for realizing the self, who have attained what's called the gold dragon body. And I did show you a photo of one of his advanced students that was transforming himself. And it's just to show other people an example of our own human potential, because this is not relegated to just the yogis and the masters that historically have had these secrets. It's out in the open now, and it's everyone's birthright. I have not seen someone transform into their light body. And in most traditions, once you attain those levels, you don't openly display it. You just don't. But I have spoken to colleagues that have witnessed relatives who practice this system changing into more, how shall we say, etheric forms, which taught them very directly that 3D is not what we think it is. It literally is a projection of our subconscious mind. It taught them to see everything as essentially empty in the world, because it is. It's nothing more than a projection of pure consciousness, a projection of the Tao, and our body is one of those things. And so once you understand that consciousness, as made available to you through the practice of Kundalini Gong, actually created the physical laws of the universe, you can override them whenever you want. If you want to become young, you become young. If you want to heal a physical affliction, you can do it. It is called mastery, and it is a practice. It doesn't happen overnight, but it can happen fairly rapidly and in one lifetime to a person who is willing to arrive with an empty cup. In other words, put everything you've learned aside long enough to learn something new so that your empty cup can hold some new information, and you'll eventually be able to apply this and know it directly from these simple practices. It never was complicated to begin with. And as you know, Taoists like to keep things simple and natural, and that's what they've done here. They've refined it over the centuries to what we have today for our benefit.
Well, it's been a brilliant show, Phil. You're a fascinating guy, and I know that we could do many more shows, because based on the conversations that you and I had in Knoxville, I know that you've got so much to share.
Oh,
so Phil,
can you just
tell us, you know, what do you have planned for the rest of the year, and just remind us, if people are interested in these practices, how can they contact you?
Okay. I have a website that will have my email on there. I'll just give my email first. It's p_Lang. That's p_LAING@yahoo.com. My website is formlessandtrue.com. That's for me. However, my teacher's website is primordialalchemist.com, and there you can read a little bit more about the Kunlun system. He's the one who formulated it and refined it for the modern practitioner. And you'll also be able to read a little bit more about the other alchemy traditions that he teaches, such as Mongolian shamanism and some of the esoteric practices of ancient Egypt, of which he's fully, he's like a full shaman from the Mongolian tradition. And all of these things have alchemy as a common point, and this is what is of interest to Max. And so they want to learn more about that. They go to primordialalchemist.com, and there's, again, a list of all my colleagues on a facilitator list there that shows all the apprentices. We call ourselves apprentices. They can go there, and they can find a teacher that's near them, or they can call me and get a group together, and I'd be happy to teach them. It's fun. If it's not fun, it's not Kunlun Negung.
Well, thank you, Phil. It's been a fascinating show. I wish you all the best, Phil.
And it has been fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for giving me an opportunity.
Would love to do a show sometime on the sacred geometry with you. So I'll be in contact with you about that.
Awesome. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thank you, Phil. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend.
You're welcome. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Maureen came off mute.
Bye. Bye.
Bye, Phil. But what an interesting subject. How different is that?
I love it.
Well, it's absolutely fabulous, but it's everything that I've come to learn, because I've studied Zen Buddhism for, you know, close to 25 years. That's how all of this started, and I believe it's exactly the Tao and the source energy and stuff that has led me to do what I'm doing now. You know what I mean? When I teach people how to be more psychic or how to be more intuitive, it's through all those personal types of studies. And I think it's absolutely fascinating, everything you said.
And I went to Phil's workshop here in Knoxville, and it was a real experience. Incredible. Mm. Absolutely fascinating. Well, okay, let's make some announcements before we go on. I want to thank Phil, obviously, for joining us. I've got a lot of respect for Phil and his knowledge and his work. It's great to have him on the show and sharing his insights with us. So as always, if you would like more information about Phil and his work, there is a guest page now for Phil at psychicaccesstalkradio.com. So I want to make a few announcements. Be sure to stay tuned for the rest of the show, and to get your free on-air reading with our gifted psychics. We'll announce the call-in number a little later on, but be sure to have your pen and paper ready. And if you were unable to catch our show last week on unlocking your psychic potential, you'll find a recorded archive link, as well as archives of all previous shows, on psychicaccesstalkradio.com under the Archives tab. And please do feel free to circulate the archive links and future show details to your friends and family. It's our objective to connect with as many people as possible, so please do share that information. And be sure as well to visit psychicbloggers.com. It's a fantastic website. You can learn all about many different spiritual and metaphysical topics, from reincarnation to meditation and much, much more. If you're interested in a reading from the best professional psychics on the internet, go to psychicaccess.com. You'll find that all of our psychics are verified and accuracy tested, each with their own unique gifts. You can look at their detailed profiles and find out much more about them and choose the psychic that you feel best meets your needs at that time. And you will also find the co-hosts here on Psychic Access Talk Radio available on psychicaccess.com. If you would like a reading from any one of us, we'd be delighted to hear from you. I want to thank Doug as well, who does all of our work behind the scenes, keeping us on track. It's a great honor to work with Doug, and I know he has extremely high expectations of the business and of all of our psychics. If you have a website, please check out psychicaccess.com/webmasters. You can see there that we have a program offering 50 cents a minute on readings referred to us from your website to psychicaccess.com. And as I said before, if you like our show, invite your friends to join us, get involved in the chat room and listen into the Psychic Viewpoint. There's something for everybody, so please do spread the word. I'm going to remind you now of the number for the readings later in the show. We only get a certain amount of time with each caller, so it's just one question at a time, please. And if you want to go into more detail, then you're very welcome to contact us at psychicaccess.com. So for later in the show, here's the number. It's 724-444-4851. And when you call in later on, you will be put on hold, but you will be able to hear the show and you get through in the order that you called. So let's move on. Maureen, I want to ask you if you can tell us a little about how Chinese alchemy and Taoist alchemy differ.
Well, this was one topic that I was not familiar with at all, but it was a fantastic show. And from what I was reading, I decided to do some research, and I came across this. It's a college that teaches, and it's in Belgium. But so I was reading upon it, and I guess the Chinese alchemy has, from what I understand, has been around for a long time, of course. But it also stated that the origins predate Taoism. So, Bobby said something interesting a few minutes ago about all the stuff that comes together. So really, there is no difference. I think it's just, except there's very few people that teach this, from what I understand, from what your guest was talking about. This is so. Isn't that true? Did I hear him?
Yes. Yeah. And my understanding, Maureen, is that Max Christensen was trained, and then he was able to train other people. But it's a small group, from what I understand.
Yeah. Well, so the thing that is, so the oldest element in Chinese alchemy, maybe, and I can't. It's what culture is Xian. Do you know the? Well, it goes on to say that these people are still today often referred to as strange, because of their unusual capabilities. And they would usually go up and spend time in the mountains for a long time as hermits, perfecting their life and searching for immortality. So all these things, and the herbs and all these things were gathered, but it all comes down to the bottom line, from what my understanding is, it's to live by the Tao, at any rate, I was also reading about how there's so very few authentic masters that are alive today. And a lot of them don't want to be, publicly famous, for lack of a better word. And so there's few people that are really capable of teaching this, apparently. So beware. But I found it fascinating. But except I was trying to understand, he's talking about bipolar people, people that have certain illnesses. And that, I don't know, I kind of felt awkward about that. I heard what he said, but I guess this sort of thing wouldn't work. I don't know. Steve, what do you think?
Well, his point, Maureen, was that it's...
they're not grounded.
Certain people are not well grounded, and these practices are not grounding practices, so there is some risk associated with doing these practices if we're not well grounded. I mean, I know just from my psychic work, it's so important that I ground myself. So often I'll go and lie on the grass in my yard, or I'll work in the yard with the plants, or making sure that I eat after I've been working psychically, because it's important to reground myself.
Right. So this kind of practice actually is for... for the Chinese alchemy, it's really about being able to have more. This would be so delicate, is what I'm understanding. It's more delicate than not anybody, because if you don't have, like you said, that for people that are bipolar, have certain, or leukemia or something like that, need to do something other than this.
More grounding.
Yes, because this would be such a delicate thing. You'd have to work yourself up. You'd have to be able to work yourself to a place where you could actually benefit from this. Isn't that correct? Yes.
Well, my understanding is that if you're in one of the groups that he mentioned, then it's best to do a practice that is more grounding.
Right, but then a lot of elderly people. Well, yeah, you know, I understood what you're saying, but it's well, I can also understand because it's such a very. That's why I've never really I mean, I know I've heard of the Tao and all that, but I had never heard of the practice of what he was talking. You know, it was very fascinating.
Very interesting, very different as well. And alchemy is a subject that I've become very interested in. I like the way that he talked about our common understanding of alchemy as the transmutation of lead into gold and the removal of impurities.
Right.
But the fact that this concept is relevant to everything, really, whether it's our spiritual growth or any form of evolution, we're trying to eliminate impurities to become more pure, more purified, and therefore closer to God or spirit.
Yeah, and this is what this website I was looking over. They were talking about. There were experts that they were called the metal ores, the ones that were talking about that it could be transformed into gold, looking for. The precious metals of all is gold. And, yeah, it's like a combination of all of them, and you get to the suitable name called Taoist. I mean, called the Taoist way. It's fascinating. Good show.
It is. It is really, really interesting. I've been reading a lot about alchemy recently. Well, thank you, Maureen. Brenda, I want to ask you a question now. About whether Taoism has similarities, in your opinion, with belief systems. Can you hear me, Brenda?
You know, I was really fascinated when he brought up
Brenda
the whole.
For a moment
yeah,
there.
Can you hear me? Can you
yes,
hear me?
Yes, we can now.
Oh, I don't know what happened. I was really fascinated when he talked about the Egyptian. Can you hear me now? How's that?
Yes.
See. Okay, Steve, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. I was fascinated by when he talked about the connection between the Qigong and Egypt. Can you hear me?
Yes, Brenda, we can hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's bizarre. Anyhow, because I learned, I had some teaching with their martial arts system, ancient, called Sebaka. And they use the same kind of principles as the Qigong, in which, you know, they're animals, and they study how these animals move and how they regenerate themselves. And then they talk about the different metals like brass and gold and silver. It's very universal. That's why I was fascinated by it, you know.
Well, can you explain a little bit more, Brenda, how that works?
Okay, well, for example, you know how you have the different yoga asanas and the positions?
Yes.
In Sebaka, which means crocodile, it's a kind of like a martial arts type of practice, very similar to the Qigong. Like, for example, the Qigong might have something like the monkey position, in which you generate energy and you move the energy through your body through these movements. And they would have something, for example, like the Egyptian ibis bird, and every part of that movement was symbolic to the four elements, and it had an association to a different metal. And there were breathing exercises that were associated to each one of them as well, plus meditation. So it was a complete system, but it was from ancient Egypt. It's pretty interesting.
Well, it sounds interesting. I hadn't heard of that at all, Brenda.
It's called Sebaka. Sebek,
Sebaka.
Sebek is the crocodile. Sebaka, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sebaka, I'll look that up. It sounds very interesting.
Yeah, and Thoth, when you're fascinated by Thoth or Tahuti, well, one of the positions is the crane, and then when you bring your hand up, and the four fingers are the elements, and then spirit for the fifth. It's pretty amazing.
Excellent. Well, I'll check that out, Brenda. Thank you. Well, Bobby, what are your experiences of, or what's your understanding and view on alchemy?
What? As far as experiences with what he was talking about?
Well, what's your experience of mental alchemy and the you see, I think of mental alchemy as the what most people name the law of attraction.
Right.
And I know that you're very into coaching people and helping people to understand how they can create the outcomes that they really want, partly right. by tuning into spirit, partly by them projecting the right energies. So right. I wanted to ask if you could tell us a little more about mental alchemy and using our energy and outlook to get where we want to be.
Yeah. You know, obviously it's something because everybody really tries to think differently or tries to, or makes an effort at thinking a particular way, trying to think positive. Okay, so I am what I think, so I'll try to picture myself as being this. And then they try or they effort, and it's usually that they're unable to sustain that. Like anybody can think good about themselves, but it's different to try to be able to sustain that over time. And sometimes it's a simple matter of the fact that they're more paid more attention to, or it's become more of a habit of thinking about themselves in a different way, you know, in more limiting ways. And it's just become a habit. So you just need to, you know, do it a few more times. Other times it's because we don't believe it. You know, they think about themselves in a particular way, or that they can do a particular thing or be a status. Let's just say if somebody wanted to be psychic, oh, I could never do that, or I could never. I'm sure you've heard that before. Like, I think I'm a little intuitive, nothing like what you can do, but I think I'm intuitive. You know what I mean? Like, they automatically limit themselves in comparison to what it is that we can do. And I always try to really stress that, you know, I wasn't always able to do what I can do now, and I've worked very hard. And that's why I believe that you can completely transform into whatever it is that you think, and just again making a different habit. And with the Tao and with releasing and letting go, you're stopping those thoughts, you're stopping the habitual pattern. And what can really be tricky is that just releasing the negative thoughts, not trying to think positive thoughts, but releasing the negative ones, you're automatically in more of a positive arena. In other words, the thoughts or the beliefs just automatically change. It's nothing that you have to effort at, because you know, when you just stop beating the drum of negativity, silence is there. You don't have to try to be silent. You have to try to stop beating the drum. You just stop beating the drum. Do you see what I mean? And then silence is automatic, and you can't help but think and believe differently into whatever it is that you're wanting, better job, you know, whatever limitations that we put on ourselves. And so I think it has everything to do with what we do, with how you live your life, because everything is that vibration. And if you don't, like you were talking about getting grounded, this is another way to ground yourself, you know. And if you aren't grounded, then yeah, you just fly off the handle and you don't have control over anything, it seems. And then most people get spinning around that, don't they?
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. It's a fascinating subject. I'm trying to really learn as much as I can about mental alchemy and go beyond really the material that's in the bookstores on the law of attraction, and actually trying to learn really about the more ancient knowledge and texts around alchemy and creating what we want to create.
It's very unfiltered and very raw, and yeah, you would do well to look at old masters. I love Lao Tzu and some of the older masters like that. That again, it is completely unbiased and it doesn't have prejudice and opinion. And anytime, most of the time, when you hear anybody talking about this, it's usually not from their own experience. It's from what they've interpreted the text to be. And I think you find that in religions. I think you find it in this, what people have read, and they just, that's all it is. It's just mere interpretations, isn't it, of what they believe instead of their own personal, personal experiences.
And I want to ask you, Bobby, as well about the dinosaur hunting. Tell us what you've been up to this week.
Well, so South Dakota is rich in fossil. It's rich in dinosaur stuff. One of the biggest dinosaurs in the world, a T-Rex named Sue, was found here and a few other dinos. And I had someone who contacted me who owns a farm, and they had found some dinosaur bones on her land, and she wanted me to come up and see if they continued to dig, would they find more? And more of not only this fossil, like, was it worth to continue to dig? Or is this it that they would just find? And then also if there were other dinosaur bones around. And, you know, I have enough confidence in my ability that it's just energy, isn't it? It's just how you tune in. It's like going into a room and it's using a place memory, what they call place memory, of seeing what happened there before and what the image was in the room, or like going to old historic sites and seeing where buildings were, what they looked like. You know, if they say, well, the building was over here and it was torn down, you can see if it was right where the guide says it was or not. And so I just figured it would be the same kind of thing. It doesn't matter if it was 65 billion years ago or not. So I went up and I tuned into a lot of energy, and I felt that not only was the dig worthwhile and continued to do more, but I did sense many other areas that we marked off with flags that I believed that there could be bones and such. And like I was telling you earlier, if they're not there, I'd be interested in what kind of energy I was picking up, because I not only would I sense the energy, but I would sense, like, I'd get the picture. And I don't know my dinosaur types other than, you know, what we learned, Triceratops, Brontosaurus, you know, those easy ones. But I could see the image in my head, what it looked like, and what it reminded me of. And when I would say that, the archaeologist or the paleontologist on the dig would say, that is this type of dinosaur. Or I would say, you know, it's got a long neck, but it's not like a brontosaurus because it's got this. And it would be, well, that's this type of dinosaur. And, you know, so it was very fascinating, the whole thing. Just a lot of fun.
Well, it sounds it, Bobby. You have to let us know what happens. If you discover any dinosaurs, we want to hear about it.
Okay? I will. They're gonna dig more into on the 2nd of July. So I should know next week coming up if the... If it's Bobby the Dinosaur Whisperer, or, you know.
Well, keep us posted, Bobby. I'm excited about us all meeting together in LA next week. Brenda, can you tell everybody a little bit about our meetup in LA?
Yes. Anybody who is going to be in LA or wants to come to LA on the 7th of July, all of us, Steve, myself, Bobby and Maureen will all be at PopCon LA, as well as some other fabulous psychics from PsychicAccess.com, and we'll be doing a panel, a Psychic Access panel, at 12:30, and it'll be a lot of fun. And we hope to be able to, like, meet some of you if you'd like to come down. It'll be awesome. We're looking forward to it, aren't we?
Yes, very much.
Yes, we are.
It's going to be fun. We'll have a good laugh, a good time.
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm not sure whether we should be taking calls. We've got quite a number of people queuing, I think. I've got a caller, or I've got a notice here that we've got a caller from New Jersey, and you're actually taking the first call, Bobby.
Oh, awesome. Hello, New Jersey.
Hello. Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Can you hear me?
What's your first name?
I'm good. Deborah.
Hi, Deborah. Okay. So what would you like to talk about?
Hi, how are you? I would like to know, what do you see as far as me and my friend Alex being friends again? I know he's angry and I did some crazy stuff, but do you see us ever being friends again?
You know, I was just getting ready to say that. You know, for as much as you trust me, I was going to say instantly that he's hurt. I know angry, you know, can come from being hurt as well, but that's one of the first things I sensed, was that he's, you know, he's kind of hurt through all of this. I think he will. You guys have the type of connection that reminds me, sometimes you get two friends who just are connected, and they can go through a whole tornado worth of stuff. But then that tornado, if you don't keep poking at it, if you don't keep trying to be friends, if you don't keep trying to say you're sorry, you know, that just kind of give it its space. And the type of connection that, that reminds me that you both have is that, that if you just let it kind of calm down and dissolve out, that eventually you'll drift back to being friends. Because I also feel that this isn't the first time you guys have, maybe not to this degree, but first time that you've argued or have stopped talking or been mad at each other. Like, it's happened this way before, you've been apart, and then, but it's always, but it kind of drifted back together again. So
it's happened a lot.
I think it will this time.
Our birthdays are the same day.
What's that, sweetie?
Excuse me?
What did you just say?
I lost you. I just said our birthdays are the same day, so we have like the same personality.
Oh, yeah. Oh no. That's it right there.
It's kind of scary.
Yeah, I know. No, you guys are fine. Just give it, this will just take a little longer because he was more hurt this time. So I do feel that, that you guys will be just fine.
Okay. You.
You're welcome. Take care.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, Bobby. Well, next caller is from California for Maureen.
Hello. Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Hi, what's your name?
Hi, my name is Karina.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
I'm ready for you.
I have a question for you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, so my question is, I have not worked for a while, and I'm currently interviewing with several companies, and it's kind of nervous time in my life. It's very stressful, and some companies that told me they really want to hire me, they don't communicate back with me.
Okay, you know what? I'm having a hard time hearing. You're breaking up a bit, so I'm trying to understand. This is about your work. I got that part. So can you? I don't know if my other host can you. Are you guys? Can you hear her better than I can? Anybody?
No, she's really fading in and out, yeah. And echoing, and it's just kind of a bad condition.
It is. It's hard for me to. Can you? Yeah, it's really hard for me. Will you try again? I mean, maybe I can hear you better because I didn't get much of that at all. Are you still there?
Okay, I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you better. Yes.
Okay, my question is, I have not worked for a while, and mm-hmm. I'm interviewing with several companies. Can you hear
got
me?
Got it. Yes, I understand. I got it. I understand you. Okay, so your question is, if one of these, if you, future work of one of these companies, is that correct?
Oh, something like that, yes.
Well, you know, I do see you. Actually, I do see you waiting for the most ideal one I see coming, and it looks like within 3 weeks. And it looks, but you know, you said there's a couple companies, but there's one particular one. I feel it's a number three. There's a number or a third opportunity, the third one, and. And I'm getting like within a 3 week period, and I see you working. I see you actually very happily working, and also I also see that you're outside and able to enjoy the outside as well while you're working. Maybe because of the hours or something, or you're able to work from home. I'm not clear on that, but I do see. But it'll be the third opportunity, and I do see this. It'll be a good time for you to start working as well. You've gone through a lot of intense stuff, but can you hear me okay? Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, well, I hope that helped you, but did you say you had three? Did you say you had a few different job opportunities that you were looking at?
several companies that I talked to. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and like I said, I'm seeing like there's it will be like the third one, even though you might get an opportunity to do a, like maybe the first or set two. It's the third one or the third one that's presented to you, whatever that means. But that's the one I see will be very positive for you, and it'll suit you very well. And are any of these jobs, would you be able to work from home at any of these opportunities? Or would you have some days off? I just see you in the daytime being outside in the plants.
Hello?
Hi, can you hear me? Okay? Did you hear what I just said?
Yeah, it's breaking up.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I'm just saying I see it really positive, but it looks like within three weeks, it looks fantastic. But I do see you around your home too, enjoying yourself outside. So, and which you deserve.
Thank you. Okay,
I hope I helped you. I'm sorry about the phone line.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Bye bye.
Where did Steve go?
I don't know.
I was making an announcement on mute.
See how many intuitive people could pick up on it, right?
Well, it was only for mute.
It was
a mute for mute, right?
Mute for mute. I know. I try to make sure I go on mute when you guys are reading so that you don't hear my cats in the background. But I was just reading out the number for the listeners. So just to repeat for you all, the call-in number is 724-444-4851. And we've got a call for you now, Brenda. Oh, no, we haven't. We've lost the call. We did have a call from Washington
State. That nerve. And I was ready for that call, I'll have you know.
You had all the answers.
Could have been.
I had all the answers right here in my card.
It would have been one of your most brilliant readings ever.
Oh, my God. This would be, like, phenomenal. It would be better than Bobby's dinosaur hunting. No, I'm kidding.
You were right. So I could sense from here in terms of you're 100% right with that caller, Brenda.
I know. I know you could sense it, right?
I could just tell that you were going to be spot on, so fantastic. I can't think straight, seeing because I'm really excited about going to LA and meeting you all properly.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. We should definitely... Where are you staying? Do you know where you're going to be staying?
I was in contact with a friend who recommended... She said to me, stay in Beverly Hills or Venice Beach.
Oh, wow, you're going to be in Venice? Then I guess you're going to have to rent a car then.
Hmm? Well, I think it was about 30 minutes from the conference center.
Yes, uh-huh. See, yeah. I thought maybe you would go to the Bonaventure, was right downtown.
Is that near the conference center?
Yeah, very much so, the Bonaventure, yeah. You could take a taxi.
Okay. Is that a good part of town to stay in? Is there lots to do and see?
The Bonaventure is an correct me if I'm wrong, Bobby, but you know, it's been in several movies. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's right in the middle of downtown LA. Mm-hmm.
You deserve
nothing. It's very well known.
I mean,
it was really, really something. I mean, it's a really fantastic hotel, actually.
Right, the Bonaventure.
Yeah, it's very well known.
Well, I shall look that up and see if I can get a good deal then. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. It's a shame and I know it's probably just the way things work, but it's such a shame that we only have an hour. You know what I mean? Like, this first time we're getting together, it would be so great to be able to stay with each other for a couple of hours and do what we do. It's going to be tough to stop it, isn't it, because of the flow and the energy, I think.
It is going to be really tough, but then we can meet back at the booth, and then we can talk to people. We're going to be next to an actor from True Blood and then some Star Trek people. They're putting us in that area.
Well, you just can't go wrong with True Blood and
I
Star
know.
Trek.
Well, I mean, really.
That's going to be awesome. Very cool. Steve, you've been to California before,
I have. I went to Beverly Hills about 6 years ago with my partner at the time, and we had an argument outside Barbara Streisand's house And
as you do.
I tore up the California guide in a tantrum and threw it in her fountain in a rage. And I like to think that she was home at the time and that she noticed. I like to think that she remembers. And right. She speaks to all her celebrity friends about seeing this British guy tearing up a guide with his Spanish boyfriend and throwing it in the fountain.
You had a complete fit. You had a hissy fit, didn't you?
I did. It was really pathetic. It was all because all I wanted was a photograph of a mailbox that I liked. And he wouldn't take it.
What's wrong with him? He sounds like there was like a power play between the two of you.
I'm sure that was the inspiration for her song People.
Bobby, I think actually you make a good point, but I think that probably she will have been inspired enough to write at least the whole album.
By one action, yes. Cameras in the fountain or something.
Anyhow.
If I'd had my attorney with me, I could probably get royalties.
Well, it's probably filmed anyhow. They probably have cameras out there to like observe stalkers, Steve. No.
It didn't look like it. It didn't look like it. I found it really interesting to walk around Beverly Hills. I love the States. I find it so incredibly diverse.
You went to Hollywood Boulevard and all that, right?
Yeah, but I didn't feel very comfortable in Hollywood. I was quite surprised. I thought it would be very upmarket, but it seemed a bit scary to me.
Well, you know, there's a very old restaurant called Musso and Frank's where all the old Hollywood stars. You've been there, Bobby, have you?
I actually did. I had a very good friend of mine when I very first moved to California walk me down on Hollywood Street, and we went in there. And they got the pictures of the old people, and we sat in booths. You know,
the energy. You can see spirits in Musso and Frank's. My daughter and I had dinner there after we bought some hooker shoes. And then when we looked at them, there was a spirit right over her shoulder, a silhouette of an apparition above her shoulder. It was really fantastic. Yeah, the food is kind of funky. It's like old. It's like the kind of food you'd find in the 30s, like kidneys. Like who eats kidneys anymore? You know.
Right.
But you know what? I know. But the Cosmopolitans are like the best in the world.
Hooker shoes and Cosmopolitans. That's Saturday night in Hollywood, baby.
Well, Maureen, bring your hooker shoes. We're all going to go out in hooker shoes and have a Cosmopolitan then.
Yeah, just like you're going to bring your red shoes, Steve.
Red shoes. Down.
Never mind. Red suede shoes and go tap.
I have got some of that. Okay. I was a bit shocked when I was there, actually, because I was walking down the street and I couldn't find my star anywhere.
I don't know
where they put it.
You just missed it. That's it. It was next to Barbara Streisand.
I don't know what they've done with it.
The mothership removed it, Steve.
The mothership removed it. Well, it's going to be a great weekend. I'm very much looking forward to it. Flying in on Thursday, so it'll be a lot of fun. And it must be roasting hot. Is it very hot at the moment?
It's roasting hot.
It's 40 degrees in Tennessee.
It's beautiful here.
Roasting hot. But that's okay. That's California.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice at the beach, so I'm sure it's pretty hot. And well, LA, you got some.
It was in the 90s today.
Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's about. It's very comfortable down here. It's probably about 75 degrees.
Always have this view that California is really advanced spiritually.
They're not though.
But you know what? I have to say something, though. In defense of California, we are at the forefront of the spirituality movement. We really are. It's the truth. I don't want to sound conceited, but really, it seems like it's really accepted here more than it kind of moves through the other states. It just seems like that. I mean, every time I travel, it seems like that's, you know, they're slightly, you know, they're just getting into like Reiki and stuff that we're doing. Now, I could be completely wrong, but that's just what I've observed. What do you think, Bobby?
I think you're at the for lack of time to say it in a better way.
I think you're right. I'm full of BS? No,
not at all. Just I don't want you know, if there's other people from other states that believe, you know, Florida and you know, you have Casadega, and then you've got in New York, you've
in
got
New York, yeah, you
know, the Lilydale and such. And I've been through those areas, and I do not feel as relaxed, expansive as I do in California. In that area, so
in that aspect of it, and it doesn't mean
things,
right? And it doesn't mean to, like, you know, diss on anybody else's things. It's just, you know, everybody's unique in their own way. It's just that for some reason there's this energy in California. We're just weirdos. What can I say?
Yeah, you would think that. Yeah, I think it's got a bad reputation, you know, for that. You know, that because you, unfortunately, there's a lot of people, you know, go down to Venice Beach or Santa Monica Pier and see, you know, some of the people doing readings there, but you can't
those
judge.
Those are not psychic. What,
no, well, that you can't judge that. You know, you can't judge the movement based on that, so.
No. Yeah.
There's a question from the chat room, Brenda, if you want to answer.
Oh, sure, definitely.
From Bert. Do you see it
and
right
I
there?
Wanted to and I wanted to talk to Bert, too.
Did you? Yeah. Oh, good. Bert's a very dear friend of mine that I've known for probably close to 20 years now or so. Her and her husband. So this would be good that you're reading for them.
Okay, well, let's take a look. Bert wants to know if her husband's health will get better and his mental attitude. In the chat room, I kind of, like, you know, I kind of connected with Bert because she talked about sweat lodges, and there's no good ones here in California that I've found as yet. But I was privileged to, you know, go to a sweat lodge that was run by Lakota Sioux. But they were visitors. So let's see, Bert, what's going on here. You know, what I'm seeing right here as far as the health, I feel that there's a very fine line between, you know, him helping himself. It looks like he could attain healing, but a lot of it's going to take mind power. He's going to have to, it's an attitude that's going to have to change. And when I look at it, it feels like, you know, he, in some ways he might be unwilling to because he's scared. There's some fear, an element of fear there. But one of the things that I'm seeing is if he can fall back on his faith, his individual beliefs, I do believe that he's going to be able to work his way out of this. But I really do believe that as far as his health is concerned, it's starting from his mind first. I see that he could overcome something big, which they have talked even about surgery, in the next 30 days if he starts to kind of, like, listen to his body. And she stuck by him and all this stuff, Bert. Good for you, because I do see a true and lasting love there. But again, I feel that he's got to get a handle on his mental attitude, and a lot of that's going to be coming back to his belief system and his faith, and I feel that that could turn the corner, and then he could have some realizations, you know, for the good, too. That's what I see. So,
well, there you have it. Good.
Yeah. I mean, it looks very positive. It's almost like, you know, when you're on the edge of something and you know you just need to change your attitude, you've just got to turn that corner. You know, you get kick your butt out of that hole. That's what I'm seeing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a question for you, actually, Brenda. Mm-hmm. And I was intrigued when you were giving your introduction at the beginning of the show when you were talking about how you work, and you mentioned the crystal ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask you about that, because I know we haven't had a show about the crystal ball.
Mm-hmm.
So how exactly does that work? You see images in the crystal ball?
Well, you know, there is a real history about the crystal ball. I mean, even, I don't know if anybody knows about, like, the history of, like the Mormons or any of the early settlers of, you know, the United States. Actually, they used something called the peepstone, which was a crystal ball, but it was egg-shaped, you know, to see into the future. And the crystal ball has been used for thousands of years. I have a natural crystal, and when I look into it, it's kind of like our last week's show when we were talking with Billy Roberts. He talked a little bit about scrying, and crystal ball is scrying, and you look into it, but the images in your mind when you see it, I mean, you see those images as clear as can be. Some of my most precise predictions are through that crystal ball. But it's like, really, it's kind of almost like it bounces up into your, in the images in your mind. Do you see what I mean? It's in your superconsciousness is where you see it. Because people get nervous. They go, well, if you see me in there, like, am I naked? They've actually asked me that, you know. If I say, I see you with so-and-so and this and that and da-da-da, they go, well, do you see us naked? I'm like, no. You know? So if somebody asks, I like to tell them it's like a movie starring you. The images, they come up like that. It's very clear. It's an advanced form of scrying because it takes a while to learn it. It won't happen to you overnight.
So yeah. where did you get the crystal ball, and what type of crystal does it have to be?
Well, it's interesting. You know, there are a lot of schools of thought on that, but I started reading the crystal ball before the New Age craze in the 80s, and the crystal balls then were Italian crystal. They were glass. It was an Italian crystal. It was completely transparent. And what we would do to learn it is you put a candle to the side and it would show kind of like a crescent of golden light, and in that crescent is where you'd see your images. That's how you would learn it. Nowadays, you can buy actual natural crystals. I have several crystal balls, but the one that I'm using now most exclusively is a natural crystal ball, and it's rutilated with strands of silver. So it's got some what they call inclusions in it, which is, you can't let that influence you. An inclusion is kind of like patterns in the actual crystal itself. You want to get the clearest ball that you can possibly get, which is hard to get with a natural crystal. I mean, you'll spend a lot of money with a real natural crystal. There was a shop in Santa Monica, and they had one the size of a bowling ball, and it was a natural crystal. It was almost totally clear, and George Harrison actually bought it. Now, before he passed over, so you can see you probably know it was a lot of money. It was over $10,000. So,
wow, have we ever done a show on crystals?
We probably should. I think that would be fascinating. Somebody who's in a crystal healing, or even crystal ball scrying, because crystal ball scrying is it's been around forever, you know, and or they sometimes call it peep stones.
Yeah, and you know, I've become very interested in crystals. Now, I've been reading quite a lot about them, and there's a theory that when consciousness first descends into duality, or to experience duality, to experience the physical world, it manifests in the form of a mineral, and that crystals are the most conscious forms of mineral. And that's why we talk about transmuting lead to gold. So we should do a show on that at some point. It would be very interesting.
That sounds really fascinating. And I think we've got a chat question from Julie. I don't know. Yeah, I think it's for you, Steve.
Yes. So Julie wants to know if she'll be working soon or if she's going to be relaxing and bored at home. Let's have a look. I feel strongly that it's time for Julie to get out there. I feel as though she's got a solid home foundation and she's enjoyed having time at home, but I feel that there's a job opportunity that comes up, and I feel that it's connected to a male that Julie's already connected with. I feel that there's an older gentleman that has a business or is in a position of influence in a business and is able to offer Julie an opportunity. And I feel that by August she will be working, but I feel as though she's got to really pursue much more actively the field that she's really interested in. I feel that she's unsure which direction she should go in, but if she makes a decision and commits to going in one direction, that she'll be able to secure an opportunity. And as I said, I feel like that will be August, although I feel it's later in August, not the beginning of August. So that's what I feel for you, Julie. There's a chat question for you as well, actually, Bobby from R. Martin. And the question is, will there be positive changes within my employment? Will there be an increase in salary or just extra workload?
So, Rose, unfortunately, I do see that. I just see that there'll just be extra workload like what's been happening. I think if they come up, it feels like they would come up just very little bit. And so I think, you know, Rose, again, I don't know what's been going on at work, and you know how I'm a big fan of creating vibration and creating, you know, that space around you that enables you to receive more pay. I think it's mirroring what the self-worth is. In other words, I know that you know that you could do much more and that you could do far, far worth more, but you aren't sure that somebody else knows that. And a couple of things that I'd recommend is find a couple of different ways, and if we had more time, we could go into those, but find a couple of different more ways that you could receive confirmation that somebody else knows you do a good job other than seeing it in a pay increase. In other words, there's all kinds of ways and confirmations that we can get that we are worth the type of job it is that we do. It doesn't always have to reflect in pay. And then one of two things is going to happen, and sometimes one and both things will happen. But for sure, your self-confidence increases, and it doesn't rely on other people to notice in the monetary way. And secondarily, you will definitely receive more pay from this job or be led to a different job that says, yeah, she's definitely worth a lot more. So you can't help but expand and be better. So you'll either be better where you're at or be better somewhere else. But you've kind of fallen into a funk, it feels like, these past couple of months that have came to this. You know what I mean? So that's sometimes your line of thinking, is that it just seems like more and more keeps happening, but nothing is changing. And so that's going to reflect in your job, and sometimes it can reflect in relationships, like there's more and more, you know, talk and stuff, but nothing really seems to be going anywhere. So that just kind of feels like the vibration that's been going on. So yeah, I mean, you could definitely change that around, but I think that you can, and I'm sorry, I'm kind of stumbling here because I was trying to look over the next couple of months. I think that will definitely change, because I feel that you can, and things will start to come around a little bit for you, and then it'll eventually change, and you'll start getting paid not quite what you're worth, but close to it as much as the company can. So hopefully that helps, Rose.
Thank you, Bobby.
Sure.
I'm not sure we'll see if we've got any more questions in the chat room. It's quite nice to do some chat room readings, because I know that we always prioritize the callers first because they're waiting on the telephone. But it's nice also to interact with people in the chat room because they're faithfully there every week. Maureen, I want to ask you if you have used the crystal ball.
No, and I find Brenda, the predictive psychic, fascinating. No, I have a little crystal ball, and it's actually very interesting, though. It's a very fascinating little crystal ball. But no, I don't. But I would love to have Brenda's. You know,
you can hold it in your hand too. You don't only have to look in it. If you hold it, it'll.
I don't know. I just think about the Wizard of Oz. I just love that part. Hovering over it and just like, I know. No, I don't use a crystal ball, but I do have some very fascinating, one very fascinating crystal that I've had for 20 years. And crystals are just a tool. They're great. But Brenda fascinates me because the predictive psychic. And from my own experience of hearing her readings and so on, and from other people many to mention, she's quite very, very, very good on her prediction, her time frames.
Well, thank you, my dear.
Well, it's true. You don't have to thank me. Do you get a date? Yeah?
I was going to ask Maureen, on time frames, Brenda, do you use the tarot to calculate time frames, or do you go with your intuitive hits?
You know, I have a secret method that I use, and it's through the crystal ball. Sometimes I see it in the tarot, but it's what I can tell you. It's like I'll see a calendar flipping in my mind, and it'll stop on a date.
Okay.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. That's neat. Yeah, well, that's... I mean, so you don't see, like, the date coming out of the crystal ball?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes yeah. I use the calendar thing. Sometimes I just see other Whatever. Things, you know? It just depends.
I've never heard anybody else call themselves a predictive psychic, which I think is a fine title. I like that.
Well, there's not many psychics sometimes that will want to put themselves out like that, but
right.
I don't care. You know, I'm thinking that, you know what, my philosophy on psychic stuff is if we start to doubt ourselves, then we mess up our reading. We
absolutely.
Have to. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. Absolutely.
If you see it, you have to say it. Otherwise, you're going to overanalyze something and mess it up.
Yes, that's what happened when I first, this work, I always look at, I didn't think I'd be doing this for when I grew up. I didn't want to be this when I grew up, but this work is what I'm supposed to do, and I know that when I was put out there to do it, I was very much like not really comfortable with it, and I was that kind of stuff. And I was spinning, my head was spinning around in circles, and exactly what you said. I thought about it, and I know that I can't do that anymore. I couldn't do that because that's not what it is about. Whatever I got. So
you have to just. I mean, and it's hard because sometimes we get these images or these feelings, and you know, as you've been doing this a long time, you're not only clairvoyant, you're not only clairsentient. It all kind of combines together. It's like a holistic thing.
Yeah.
But if you And sometimes you get crazy things, and you're like, nah, that can't be. No, you've got better say it.
That's right.
You better let it come out.
And that's why I do think that I am very happy to say I'm very objective. I'm remarkably objective with everything. Even if the story sounds like so out there that somebody else, I do take claim, and I'm an objective psychic.
Well, it looks like Reggie has a question for me.
For you. Yes,
yeah.
He does.
Hi, Reggie. Listen, Reggie, you know, I know you've got a question about the, you know, can you see more with a crystal ball? I actually have a traveling crystal ball, but I have a ring, and it's a tiny little crystal ball, and I use that in a pinch. So the size of the crystal ball is only for, like, you know, you'll see a bigger image, but it's, the crystal is like a capacitor, like, or a transmitter or something like that. It's anything, I think, with a crystal skull, a crystal ball. And, like, your connection with it creates the image. The image actually happens in your mind's eye. Yeah. So, to answer your question, Reggie.
It's amazing how much you can see in your mind. It's incredible how much information spirit can actually put there.
You know what it's like to... Brendan and I are going at it. I was just going to say, you know what's always felt like? You've ever seen those things at the old, some places, and you look inside of them and you flip and you turn this thing in the little movies, so black and white, old time movie, you know, flipping the pages.
What are those things called? Nickelodeons or something?
Well, I don't know. Maybe that is the word. They're from the 30s, I think.
Mm-hmm,
that's
they flip.
What. Yeah, they flip, and yeah, I haven't seen one in a long time, and that's how sometimes there's projector in my head. I get stuff like that. That's how it kind of little old movie projections that flip pages.
Images, they're images.
Yeah, but they are kind of like they explain them like that. Or I feel real intense, and sometimes it's hard for me to put that into words. But sorry, Brenda, I interrupted you. You were about to say something.
No, it's all good.
Okay, well, I'm done.
Well, thank you, guys. It was a great show, and I really enjoyed the interview with Phil Lang. Now, Bobby, you're hosting next week, I think, aren't you?
I am.
Great. What do you have planned for us?
I have no idea. Dark Forces with Bill Bean.
Dark Forces?
Apparently, he and his family... apparently were so haunted and their whole family was just torn apart by the different things that were happening to his family. They moved into a house and just these spirits and everything, this huge haunting. And, you know, we've heard the stories and we've seen, you know, movies based on that. But there have been so many radio hosts, so many TV hosts that have interviewed this guy and have been just absolutely convinced and terrified at his story. And he'll be on next week to not only tell us the story, but what he did to overcome all of that and where he is now, and what he absolutely believes, especially if
how fascinating.
Believe that you are, you know, if you have demons or that type of thing, how to get rid of them, how to get that out of your energy and your life. So crazy stuff. So it should be a very, you know, one of those shows that you just kind of hang on, you know, every word that he says. So it should be pretty interesting.
Hang on to your crystals.
hang on to your balls.
Under a blanket.
Yeah, your. I was going to say it, but Bobby beat me to it.
It is. It's serious stuff, though, because I used to be surprised by the number of people that experience that kind of thing, and I was reading in France a book about there's a book about exorcism. The gentleman that I can't remember his name, but he was head of exorcism in the Vatican. And you know, when people have these problems, it's just dreadful, and it can be, well, we know it's life threatening on occasions. It's dreadful. So it's going to be a really interesting subject to discuss with him.
I'm going to put some holy water on me before the show, for sure.
Oh, we're going to bring some with us.
I have a lot here. I'll share.
Well, it's going to be a good show next week, and it was fun this evening. So I want to invite you all to say your goodbyes, and I hope you all have a wonderful weekend.
Bye. Bye.
Good night.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.